It's a little like waiting for the other shoe to drop. If the precise timing of dropping that shoe was being debated in media and political circles and was being strategized about in the back rooms in the corridors of power in Ottawa.
Stephanie Plant, a researcher of Canadian politics at the University of Ottawa, believes the Liberals want voters to settle down after heading back to work following summer vacations, so the Prime Minister might not drop the writ until closer to the September 15th deadline.
The shorter the time frame, the shorter the sprint, the faster he can get his messaging and his team out there.
It might seem as if the past few months have been an endless cycle of polls and predictions and reaction to them and people scratching their chins and wondering what it all means. But really, we haven't even started yet. As soon as the writ drops, the polls will come daily, and they will come from everywhere. Some of those polls will be bang on, some of them absolutely will not be. And that will apply equally to analysis of them. So rather than try to dig into which polls are good and which are bad and who's got it right, we will take a more scientific approach. When you factor all of those numbers together, what stands out? What's just noise? Leaving out these screaming weekly headlines, what has actually shifted in the Canadian political landscape this summer? And if you happen to be a normal person with a job and a life outside of the election bubble, what do you really need to pay attention to over the next couple months? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Philippe J. Fournier models Canada's elections at 338canada.com and at macleans.ca. So, Philippe, we talked to you way back in, April. What have you seen shift in your projection model since then?
Well, actually, plenty. The last time we talked together, Jordan, the Conservatives were way ahead mostly because of the SNC-Lavalin story. And Jody Wilson-Raybould just announced that she would be an independent candidate along with Jane Philpott. And so back in April and May, the Conservatives held a 4 to 6 point lead on average in the polls, and they were heading to a victory. And then, well, summer happened. Summer happened, and it seems like the Conservatives wasted an opportunity, especially in Ontario and Quebec, to grow their base and to inflate the numbers. But we have seen several polls from professional firms, Angus Reid, Léger, Ipsos, and all these guys were on the field this summer, and they showed, especially in Ontario, the Liberals gaining ground back and the Conservatives slipping. And so right now, in the popular vote projection, we have a statistical tie, but a statistical tie means most likely a Liberal win, because there's so many votes concentrated for the Conservatives in Alberta that it inflates their popular vote number, but it does not increase their seat count. And so right now, I would say that the most likely scenario would be a Liberal plurality, probably a minority, but it could also be a majority. And so we're at the starting line.
How quickly can those things change? Because, we're all wary of polls a couple of months out of the election. And to your point, they just changed over a couple of months, even when you're working with kind of the compilation of all the polls that are taken. How fast do those things tend to move?
Well, we have to be careful. And I know there's a lot of public mistrust about polling. I would attribute that to not really understanding what polls do. Polls do not predict the future. They're a snapshot of the present and usually of the recent past. And so what the numbers that we have right now indicate that, yes, Justin Trudeau is the favorite to win the election by not that much, but that's right now. And so, next week, there's going to be the first debate, most likely the first debate of the season, hosted by McLean. It would only take one bad performance by Justin Trudeau or one really good performance by Andrew Scheer or Jagmeet Singh or Elizabeth May to completely turn this thing around.
When you're dealing with a compilation of polls like that, and, to your point, you mentioned one debate that's coming next week, how do you go about attributing what's driving that? For instance, I'm thinking now of the recent SNC-Lavalin ethics report, or maybe the Liberals highlighting Andrew Scheer's past comments on gay marriage. Can you drill down into your data and try to model what's driving it?
Well, that's a very good question, Jordan. And I have to tell you that in science, usually, when you want to see the effect of a variable, you change only one variable and you keep everything constant. In social science and in political polling, that's not always possible. And so I'm always very, very cautious to attribute cause and effect to events and polling, because we really do not know for sure. The exception was maybe the SNC-Lavalin story, because it just occupied so many media cycles last winter. And we saw the Liberals dropping its support for 8 consecutive weeks after the Globe and Mail story was out. And so that was pretty, straightforward cause and effect. But the Ethics Commissioner report came out on August 14th, I believe. And we've had 6 or 7 national polls that was on the field. They were on the field after that date, and we have not seen a dent in the Liberal support due to that ethics report. So it doesn't seem to have any effect. And the what you said about the gay marriage and the social issues and the abortion story. Abortion story was a big story in Quebec. I'm not sure how big it was in Canada, because we've had polls on the subject. Léger last year polled Canadians on their views on abortion, and for instance, Quebec. 85% of Quebecers feel that the abortion issue is closed. That issue is done. And so there is no ground to be made. There is no votes to be gained for the Conservatives touring the country talking about abortion. But there's plenty of ground to be made by the Liberals talking about the Conservatives talking about the abortion issue.
Right.
So the straightforward cause and effect, I'm very careful with that. But for sure, the past few weeks have not been good for Andrew Scheer. Thankfully for him, he has a lot of time to get back up.
One of the reasons we like talking to you is because you're not focused just on the national polls, although those play a role in voting intentions. What have you seen recently in the regional polls that really stands out to you when you're putting it into your model?
There's been some very interesting local numbers. I would start with my home province, if you don't mind. In Quebec, what was really interesting is that when the SNC-Lavalin story occurred in February, voting intentions in Quebec, it was the only place in Canada where voting intentions pretty much remained stable. The Liberals
really?
Did not gain. They did not gain, but they not really lose either. And we saw the Conservatives climb up a few points, but it was, at the expense of, the fact that there's still a lot of undecideds, and it was always within the margins of error. But in Quebec, the voting intentions really didn't move, except for the Bloc Québécois, who, they had a new leader, and so they gained a few points. But outside of that, we saw changes in Atlantic Canada. Atlantic Canada was all Liberal, was all red 4 years ago. But when we look at the numbers now, well, the Liberals are still in front, but it's not a dominating lead like it was in 2015. And so they should lose a few seats in that region, especially in New Brunswick. But again, and I know it's an old cliche, but Ontario has the most seats and has the highest population. And so it's going to be a battleground, especially in the suburbs of Toronto. The 905 area has about 30 districts. And I checked my numbers just this Sunday. Out of those 30 districts, 19 are either toss-ups or leanings. And so that's the election right there. It's Justin Trudeau won a 14-seat majority in 2014, and there are 19 toss-up seats in the 905. So if, let's say, the Conservatives do a little better than we think, and they win most of those seats, you could see, a very diminished Liberal in government, or you could see the Liberals outright losing power. So every scenario is on the table. Alberta and Saskatchewan did not move much. We know that the Conservatives are very popular here. I had a few readers from Alberta saying, we want to know, will the Conservatives win 33 seats or 34 seats? So
right.
That's the question right now. That's the question right now in Alberta. Finally, if we go out west to British Columbia, the rural parts of BC should be mostly conservative. Vancouver will be a battle between the Liberals and the NDP, with the Greens maybe playing spoilers. And Vancouver Island should be very interesting, not necessarily for who gets to win power, but the Green Party, their numbers are really good on Vancouver Island, and there are 7 districts over there. So they should be in good position to make few gains there. What surprised me most was the NDP numbers. The NDP in Ontario is down and Quebec is getting wiped out. It's not doing well in Atlantic Canada. And so when we look at the seat count for the NDP, they won 44 seats 4 years ago. And now they would be lucky to get a third of that right now.
Really?
It's you know, and the numbers could be wrong by a few points. And of course, I will adjust when new numbers are published. But right now, it's really looking good. In fact, I was told by a reader that really noticed that right now the Bloc Québécois is expected to win more seats than the NDP.
That was my next question, is you mentioned the Bloc a little bit, and you mentioned the surprising performance by the Greens, especially out west. The last time we talked, people were flocking to the Greens, or at least more than they had been, because climate change was an issue that was clearly rising in the polls. Has that continued? Where are they right now, and how much of a spoiler could they play?
Well, that's a very good question. The Green Party, well, the surge that they had in the spring was a modest surge, but it was a real surge. We saw them go from 5 to 6% all the way to 10 to 12%, but it stalled there. They seem to have hit a ceiling in their numbers, and I can't really tell you why, other than the fact that right now, since the vote projection is so close in Canada, at some point those voters will maybe say, okay, so if we vote Green, maybe we're helping electing a conservative government or a liberal government. And so they'll have to take a decision because of our voting system, you know, the first past the post. You have to make a decision. If you vote for a third party that doesn't have a chance to win your riding, you may help a worse option. In your mind, of course. I'm not saying which one is worse or which one is better. But if we look at the regionals for the Green Party of Canada, well, we know that they're doing well in BC, as I mentioned. They're around the 16 to 17% on average in BC. And elsewhere in the country, well, they're at the 10% threshold pretty much everywhere. 8% in Alberta, 7% in the Prairies, 13% in the Atlantic. So is that enough to win new seats outside of Vancouver Island? I am not too sure. The numbers don't suggest that. But let's say, for instance, we take Fredericton. Fredericton should be a very close race between the Liberals and the Conservatives. Let's say they split that in the middle with maybe 28 to 30% each. Yes, we could see a Green Party just go in between and squeak a tight victory there. But as for the Green surge, well, 10% is good for their standards, but it doesn't win you any seats.
What are the chances? And maybe I shouldn't be asking a scientist to speculate on the chances, but if the NDP collapse continues and the Greens stay where they are, what are we talking about in terms of balance of power when you say one of the likely scenarios is a minority government?
Well, let's allow me to take to put on my political analyst hat for a second. Let's say we have a minority Liberal government. And let's say, as you said, that the NDP collapses to maybe 10 or 12 seats. Well, is it possible for Jagmeet Singh to remain NDP leader if he leads the party to the worst result in 25 years? Well, if he holds the balance of power, well, he could make a case that he should stay. But it's going to be very hard if those numbers translate into ballot boxes on October 21st for the NDP. I do not see how Jagmeet Singh remains NDP leader. And so for the Green Party, well, they're expected to win 5 or 6 seats. To hold the balance of power, the Liberals would have to be very close to that majority threshold. So, we have not seen coalitions in this country since Pierre Trudeau first did it in 1973. I was not alive, and I'm pretty darn sure that you were not alive either. And so I'm not sure the culture of coalition is ingrained in the political science in Canada. So we'll have to wait and see. But would the Greens and the NDP say, we will support your government, but we want electoral reform? Will the Liberals do
right.
that? That's a fair question. But if I were the Liberals, I would just tell them, well, no, that's not happening. And who you're going to support? The Conservatives? They don't want electoral reform either. So they would have, the Greens and the NDP would have much, much more power, of course, if they could win maybe 40 or 50 seats. But if they're just winning a dozen, then it gives them fewer bargaining chips.
The writ is expected to be dropped in a week or less or so. What changes when that happens in terms of your modeling and the work you're doing?
Oh, except that I will not sleep for the next 6 weeks. I told my wife, well, it's going to be fun to see you sometime later this October. But I expect the polling companies to be on the field heavily right from the get-go to see where Canadians stand early in the campaign. We expect polling firms like Main Street to have a daily tracker that I will follow. And so I'm going to follow maybe 7 to 8, maybe 9 polling firms. And so every day we will have new numbers. We will have to be careful to not confuse noise for signal, because there will be a lot of noise for sure. And I'm going to be very interested to see if the debates had an effect, because again, 4 years ago, you may remember, we had a triple tie on top of voting intentions with Tom Mulcair, Stephen Harper, and Justin Trudeau for the longest time. And when did the numbers really started to move? It was after the French debate on Radio-Canada. It was September 24th. So the campaign was already 6 or 7 weeks long. And we had the first debate, and Justin Trudeau was really good. He had low expectations, and he was really good. And from that point, the NDP slowly shedded support, and the Liberals cruised to a majority. And so I will be looking forward to those before and after numbers of the debates.
For people who are going to be sort of casually following the election, at least in the early weeks of the campaign, what polls would you suggest that they really keep an eye on? Because they're going to be inundated with them, and it's going to be really hard to pull out, you know, what's important and what's not. Because I have a feeling there's about to be a lot of noise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you may have noticed that how Liberal candidates suddenly have found old videos of Andrew Scheer saying, you know, some weird stuff about education and gay marriage. And so they're just dropping that into to the public. And it's fair game. I mean, you know, Andrew Scheer did say those things. And so the Liberals are waiting for the campaign to begin to just unleash on the Conservatives. And the Conservatives, I am sure, will do the same for the Liberals. But what polls should they look at? Well, I don't want to preach for my own choir. I don't want to toot my own horn. But, you know, if you follow only one or two polling firms, you may not get the whole story. And so that's why I build my website, where I take all the polls and I deconstruct them by regions, and I rate them, and I explain to people what noise is and what uncertainty is and margins of error. Because so many comments that I have online are, yeah, but Hillary was supposed to win. And like, well, yeah, she did win. Polls measure the popular vote. So we have to remember that making a seat projection is really complicated and has high uncertainty. The totals that I will project on October 20th may be different from the totals that are elected on the next day, but you have to look at the big picture. For instance, in Alberta, in mid-April, my model correctly identified 82 out of 87 winners, which I think is great. You know, I was really happy with the result. I missed only five districts. But what happened? People from those five districts said, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Those polls are wrong.
Right.
Like, well, they were 94% right. And so we have to manage expectations. There is uncertainty in those numbers. There's noise that's entirely natural. That's the nature of polling. If you really want to have a poll with no noise, well, that's called an election. And we can't have them every year or every week. That doesn't make sense. So I try to, the same way I tell my students, I teach my students about the scientific method. I teach my students about what is uncertainty and what is fluctuations in the data. You will see a lot of noise in the data, and that's why my website is there.
So how frequently, I know you're doing weekly ones right now at Maclean's and also at 338canada.com, will you be continuing weekly through the election or upping the frequency?
Well, starting September 1st, I started daily. So,
you're really not sleeping.
Oh, I'm really not sleeping. Yeah, no, I take a few Red Bulls and lots of caffeine in my veins. But no, seriously, since there will be so much data available, as soon as it comes out, I take a look at it. I see if it's serious, if it's from a renowned firm, if it's the data is reliable. And so I take this data, I put it in my model, and every evening I update the website. So I invite our listeners to go to 338canada.com to find their districts. Every district has a very high uncertainty, but if you look at the greater picture, if you look at your province or even the whole country, well, the uncertainty reduces. It's about maybe plus or minus 4% for the main party.
We will keep an eye on it. Thank you very much, Philippe.
My pleasure, Jordan. Talk to you soon.
Philippe J. Fournier is an election modeler and a professor. He does his work at 338canada.com and at macleans.ca. And that was The Big Story. You want more? They're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also find our brother and sister shows on frequencypodcastnetwork.com. You may know that this weekend marks the opening of TIFF in Toronto, and if you are feeling movies this time of year, head on over and check out Someone Else's Movie, hosted by Norm Willner. I promise that it has your favorite films buried somewhere in its back catalog. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers, and Elisa Nielsen is our digital editor, and I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk Monday.